Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spiritual Insights with Charlotte Spicer. Spirituality and Metaphysics Talk Radio, featuring A Course in Miracles, Dream Interpretation, Guided Meditation, and the Psychic and Metaphysics Free-for-All. It's your opportunity to consult with a professional psychic medium, discuss past lives, the chakras, and more. We are non-denominational, and there are no limits. Want to change your life? You must first change your mind. No matter your religious structure, cultivate peace in your reality through self-awareness with an authentic spiritual teacher. And now, your host, Charlotte Spicer.
Well, hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. We have a very special segment for you. Today, we're joined by Mr. Carl DeVilbiss, a professional engineer who, for the last 25 years, has been a specialized group facilitator focusing on cooperation. His Be Here for Each Other movement is a universal philosophy that fosters empathetic connections to others to promote cooperation in all areas of life by exploring the insights, the behaviors, and the processes that enable dynamic cooperation among people. His captivating teaching style includes the use of tetrahedron models to illustrate the dynamics of spirituality and love. So this will be a very interesting and inspiring conversation where we get to experience a blend of science and spirituality. So I would like to welcome him to the show. Carl, thank you so much for being here and sharing this wonderful knowledge with all of us.
Well, it's a pleasure, Charlotte. I've thoroughly enjoyed preparing for the show with you, and I'm excited to have the opportunity to offer what I can.
Oh, well, just our phone conversation alone was fascinating. We were on the phone for over an hour talking about this, so I could just talk to you on and on about this. I love the blend of science and spirituality. So I wanted to start from the very beginning, if I may. What was the chain of events that put you on this path to blend the two to help others?
Well, that's a question that doesn't have a short and simple answer, but I'll try to keep it as direct as I can.
Okay.
First of all, my life, I've always been very spiritual. I didn't recognize it early. But I've always had a connection to spirit, and I've always had a fascination with how things work. When I look at the world, I see processes and systems. I don't see results, because the processes and the systems are what produce the results. And so I understood that there was a spiritual system. There was this innate knowing in me that there was a spiritual system that gave order to the universe. So I've always looked for how did that work for me? You know, where do I fit in and how does it work? And then it was fascinating because my father was an engineer, and I was kind of programmed to study engineering and practice it. And as I did that, I became, in essence, a scientist. And what engineers do, basically, is they develop mathematical and graphic models of real-world physical systems, and then they analyze the model to predict the behavior of the system. So the modeling process is something I learned and cultivated and developed a real appreciation for. If you can't model a process, it's very difficult to improve it.
Right. Absolutely. So and what branch of engineering is this, Carl?
I actually studied structural engineering, and that was also a factor because I came to truly appreciate the role of structure in organizations and in groups.
Mm-hmm.
If people don't know what their roles are in the structure of the organization, Sometimes you have blurred boundaries, you have confusion and miscommunication. So clearly defining structure is an important part of cooperation.
Mm-hmm.
And as I practiced engineering, I got my engineering, structural engineering, actually civil engineering, professional engineer's license, but I got into construction. And as I got into construction, I began to recognize that the technical challenges of built facilities were really a piece of cake if everybody was working together. And it was much easier to build the buildings than it was to get people to work together. So
I understand that for sure. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And that's universal. It's not just in construction. So I became fascinated with cooperation. And if I can share a real quick story, I was fortunate to have the opportunity to serve in the Navy as engineer officer on a small combatant ship, USS Douglas, PG-100. It only had a crew of 30, mm-hmm. and there were four officers. So I went in the Navy as an ensign, as a department head. Normally a department head is a more experienced officer. But since it was such a small ship, and I was fortunate, I took it through two overhauls. I went on board, it was in overhaul, so I learned a lot about management and leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And then right before I got out of the Navy in 1975, we went through overhaul in an Italian shipyard, the SEVN shipyard in Naples, Italy, with our sister ship. And I understood the nature of the engineer officer and the crew on the sister ship. So I got my crew together, and I said, guys, if the Italian workers have an opportunity to choose which ship they work on, I want them to choose to work on our ship. So we set about developing highly cooperative, mutually supportive relationships with all the Italian workers.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked. We finished in a 15-week scheduled overhaul. We finished 2 weeks early, and our sister ship was a week late. So I really understood from that experience the power of cooperation. And, and then the engineering modeling process, and one thing led to another, and I realized that I had a talent for helping people find more productive ways to work together cooperatively. And then in that facilitation process, which I've been doing for over 25 years, I began to see the structure come out of it.
Okay.
And that's how it all started. And what I recognized was that the triangle became evident in the work I did. What I do is I engage groups in exploring ways to work together, and I listen to what they say. I ask them questions. For instance, what gets in the way of you being cooperative together? And then I listen to what they say and help them recognize the structure of what comes out of the truth they speak.
Okay.
And what I found was if models are too complicated, you can't remember them. So the triangle emerged, only three elements. I can remember three elements. And then
okay.
One thing led to another.
Nice and simple. Okay.
Yeah.
And then that graduated to the tetrahedron?
Yes, I actually, in addition to the commercial work I was doing with corporations and government entities, I did some personal workshops. I've made presentations to spiritual groups and the like, and religion.
Mm-hmm.
And during one of those sessions, we were doing a spiritual exercise, and somebody had an inner vision of a tetrahedron. And a tetrahedron, it wasn't me who had the vision.
Okay.
A tetrahedron is four equilateral triangles. You have a triangle base, and then each of the sides of that base has a triangle that slopes up toward the top apex. So you have four equilateral triangles, and there's three elements in each of the triangles. Three is a spiritual number, four is a spiritual number, 12 is a spiritual number.
Right.
So I knew that there was something very significant that I was hearing that, and I didn't know at the time how it was going to unfold.
Mm-hmm.
But over a period of time, I had that tetrahedron in the back of my mind as I felt I was literally given it by spirit. And like I say, listening and watching for the structure, the rest of it unfolded from there.
Fascinating. And explain, a tetrahedron is more dimensional than of a flat triangle, correct?
Correct. The tetrahedron is three-dimensional. A flat triangle is two-dimensional.
Gotcha. Okay, so it's basically in the shape of a pyramid.
It is. If you think of the pyramids like in Egypt and the pyramids around Earth, it turns out there are hundreds of pyramids, and there are pyramids literally on every continent. So obviously that's a significant shape,
absolutely.
A significant structure. But those pyramids have a square base and four sides, four slope sides.
Right.
The tetrahedron is a triangle base, and it has three slope sides.
Got it. Okay. I see. Okay. Just want to get the geometry down so that we all understand.
I appreciate that.
No, I want to understand just as much as the listeners. And so what was the next step from there? And I want to say to the listeners that we will welcome your calls if you have any questions for Carl on this universal philosophy and the scientific aspects of it. But we will do that a little later in the show in the second half hour. But if you would like to call in and sit in the queue, the telephone number is area code 347-934-0751. So get your wonderful questions ready for Carl, and I will get to you as soon as we have an appropriate break in the conversation. We do have some material we'd like to cover. But what you would do is dial the number and press 1 to go into the queue, and I will get to you in order of appearance. All right, Carl, I just wanted to let everybody know that we would welcome them calling in and adding to the discussion.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. So what was the next step? Okay, so you had the tetrahedron model image, and then you incorporated with spiritual wisdom?
Yes. And let me take one brief step back.
Okay.
The tetrahedron shape came to me during a spiritual discussion. I was a group I was working with. We were actually talking about facilitating spiritual discussions, or what in Eastern religions is referred to as satsang. And
yeah.
The shape, the tetrahedron shape, came out in the discussion of facilitation and helping people learn spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that, when I first started working with organizations around cooperation, I had recognized a triangle that came out of basically what I do is I ask the question, what does a dynamic, cooperative, mutually supportive relationship look like? And I don't impose that definition on people. I just ask them to tell me, what does it look like to you? And one of the things I've learned is that I've never worked with a group of people that was not collectively smarter than I'll ever be and more knowledgeable collectively.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do is I listen to what they say and I capture it on Post-it notes. And then, you know, when I ask that question and they start brainstorming, well, cooperation means trust and understanding each other and listening and honesty and mutual goals and resolving conflict. So they start brainstorming all these things, and I put them, write it out on a Post-it note, stick it on a chart paper.
Okay.
So we might wind up with anywhere from 35 to 50 qualities and attributes of a cooperative relationship.
Okay. And so cool. You're facilitating a group. Let me just be sure I understand this. You're facilitating a group, and the tetrahedron models that you come up with for that particular group will match the dynamics of that group based on the people in it. Is that correct?
The specific responses on the Post-it notes come from that group. But the structure that emerges that creates the tetrahedron mm-hmm. is universal.
Gotcha. Okay.
See, and what fascinated me as I was doing this work is I began to recognize that this structure that emerges in the four triangles that create the tetrahedron,
mm-hmm.
the 12 elements in that structure, there's three elements to each triangle, four triangles, there's 12 elements. Those 12 elements are universal regardless of the demographics of the group.
Got you. Okay.
It doesn't matter the age, the gender. It doesn't matter the religion, the nationality, the ethnicity, the economics. None of that matters. What comes from the group always fits into the structure. It's fascinating.
It is. It is. And so tell us more, like give us an inside view into these groups. What kind of answers do they give? What kind of interaction is there when you facilitate a group like this? And is this a corporation, or it can be on a personal level as well with strangers, correct?
It can be a personal level as well. I've developed it. I've actually conducted a session, for instance, at a New Age bookstore where I worked with the owner of the New Age bookstore. We advertised it through her newsletter and mm-hmm. and advertised it locally, a group of strangers, people who'd never met before, came walking into the room, and we developed this entire model by me asking four simple questions. And the specific answers that each person shares and contributes go on an individual post-it note.
Got you. Okay.
But after the chart paper, say, for instance, we have one question, like I just mentioned, what does a dynamic, cooperative, mutually supportive relationship look like? That's one of the four questions.
Right.
Then all those post-it notes go on a chart paper, but then I sort them out into the triangular structure. So there's three groups, post-it notes, and that structure is what's universal, regardless of the demographics of the group.
Gotcha.
The actual responses may vary from group to group, but all the responses fit into that structure.
Got you. Okay. So there's a place for all of them. And just to make it clear that you do go into companies and corporations when they are in need of finding a way for the employees to work as a team. Right?
Absolutely. And
okay.
And in fact, my specialty has actually transcended just teamwork. If you really look at social psychology, teamwork, typically one group within one organization
mm-hmm.
who is focused on, the group is focused on a specific task and undertaking of some kind. And the best group size for team dynamics is around 5 to 8 people. If you get fewer than 5 people, you don't have enough diversity. If you get more than 8, you tend to get subgroups forming. So the ideal team size for true team dynamics in the context of social psychology is 5 to 8 people.
Okay.
And I typically work in large projects that might have anywhere from 25 to 50 people. So I refer to that, I personally call that strategic cooperation. It's also been called partnering. And in essence, what that means is you get a group of from different organizations and you form this cooperative endeavor and you form a cooperative culture that blends all these different organizations together. And that's actually a much higher, more difficult challenge than just building teamwork in a group of 5 to 8 in one organization.
Just to get one project completed, we want the whole organization to operate on this dynamic.
Exactly. And when you're crossing organizational boundaries, take, for instance, a construction project. You have the owner of the facility. You have a design team that is typically comprised of an architectural firm and anywhere from 2 to 4 or 5 consulting firms. They're working in the design team. So you have a group of organizations in the design team, and then you have a general contractor, and gosh, there could be 25 or 30 subcontractors.
Right.
So you have all these different companies, and they have their own vision of success. They have their own business objectives. They have their own organizational values and cultures, and they all come together and have to form this blended culture to work together on a project, and that is a very, very difficult challenge when you think about it.
And I've seen very few pull it off because I'm in the construction industry, not as much as I was a few years ago, but I've seen some real nightmare scenarios where the owner thinks one thing is happening, the design team thinks another, and even though they have meetings, they still did not communicate effectively enough for the general contractor could not get the upper two to understand why the timeline kept sliding backwards with regard to the electricians, the drywall, the paint, who's doing concrete. And it was always a comedy of errors. Like every day my husband would come home with these stories and he would have me laughing because that's his personality. He's just funny. But the way I work, I am huge on organization, efficiency, and I don't want to beat the word cooperation to death, but just, you know, blending the positives to make something happen. And I've led teams in project management and all this stuff. I don't know what my secret is to get people to get along and really join hands for a common cause. But in the construction industry, which is a perfect example, I think it's something we can all relate to, and especially those who work in offices and see the breakdowns in the links of the chain and the dynamics of an office. So that's a perfect visual for us to understand how you come in and get people to kind of see the light, so to speak. Does that make sense, how I kind of recaptured that?
You did a beautiful job. I was sitting here smiling ear to ear. I was a project manager in construction. And when I was practicing engineering, we said, all contractors are liars. And when I was practicing construction, we said, all engineers are liars.
Oh, nice.
And nobody intends to lie. The bottom line is it's a very complex process, and it's fraught with risk because of the complexity.
Mm-hmm.
And what you find when you really drill down and listen to people, the vast majority of time, what appears to be somebody trying to take advantage of you is actually them trying to protect themselves from risk.
Absolutely.
And so just trying to help people listen to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Something you mentioned, the complexity of the communications and the comedy of errors. Well, one of the major factors for that is that very, very few projects actually take time to get together on the front end and listen to each other and craft a common vision of success for everybody together in the project.
Mm.
Now, how can one organization subordinate its business objectives to the project objectives if the project objectives are not agreed to by everybody and clearly communicated to everybody?
Yes.
I mean,
I didn't understand. These are grown men who've been in business for decades, big worldwide construction companies. Huge. I'm not going to mention any names. But I just don't understand. If a meeting took place and everybody said what they had to say, basically, it doesn't mean they communicated, but they said what they had to say, which usually came in the form of a complaint. And then you'd hear stories about, okay, the drywall's up, the drywall's painted, the flooring is getting done, and the flooring guys come in and damage the drywall. And the first question anybody's going to say on a construction site is, who's paying for this?
Exactly.
Where can we shift the blame? Who's going to take responsibility for this? And then there's an additional delay while they battle that out at the boardroom table or at the job site with their hard hats and their suits. It's just I just didn't understand because, I don't know, I just, maybe I'm the weirdo. So,
no. I was the same way. And Charlotte, I'd like to take just a second to tie this back to the spiritual discussion because construction is obviously a very structured process, and a lot of different people from a lot of different organizations have to work together to create the completed facility. Well, that is a snapshot of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're all on the same planet. We're all working with the same limited, finite resources available on this planet. And how we find ways to work together to create structures and systems that make us all better together is what Be Here for Each Other is all about. So that's a very spiritual thing when you think about it. Everybody is here to learn how to become more conscious spiritually and to practice love better.
Yes.
That's not, that's that simple to me. And
right.
So cooperation to me is a big part of that because relationships with other people is our most fertile ground for learning lessons about love.
Absolutely.
And learning about love is what we're here for. Now, and I'd like to take just a second and take your observations a step further. You mentioned the confusion and some damage occurs and some rework will be required. And who's going to pay for that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's an organization at the University of Texas called the Construction Industry Institute. And it came out of a multi-year research project conducted by the National Business Roundtable.
Mm-hmm.
The project was called the Construction Industry Cost Effectiveness Project. And the results, they produced 23 specific reports, and then it was summarized. But there was 223 recommendations that came out of this report to improve the industry. And then the Construction Industry Institute was founded at the University of Texas to start doing industry-enhancing research to encourage the industry to implement those 223 recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
So they formed a task force in the late 1980s to look at partnering, the practice of building cooperation formally in a project, and a construction project is called partnering.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually how I got my start. Basically, they published a significant report in the late 90s out of Clemson University. They studied 192 projects that had a formal approach to cultivating cooperation through partnering. The researchers concluded that the average total cost saving was 10%. Now, when
10%
you think
was
about
the
it,
average what?
That's the average total cost savings from starting the project by cultivating cooperation as opposed to everybody just going and starting to do the work.
Okay.
And there was other things they discovered. They discovered that in those 192 projects, not a single one of them was delivered late. Not one.
I'm not surprised.
The average early completion was over 7.5%. They found that the rework, the kind of thing you just talked about, where somebody puts work in and it gets damaged, or they put it in and the drawings have been changed and somebody realizes it's wrong and it has to be redone,
Point
out that rework was reduced 5%.
Oh.
Now, the trade contractors who actually performed the work, you mentioned the drywaller, the painter, the concrete, the electricians, their biggest expense is labor. So even though they have submitted a firm fixed price to do their work, if they have to rework something, it's coming right out of their pocket.
Yes.
So reducing the rework by 50% in a construction project is a huge thing.
Yes.
Safety performance improved. And one of the major benefits that was reported was much more satisfying work. Okay, and what that says to me personally, what that says in my simplistic view of the world is that it's financially irresponsible to not have a formal approach to cultivate cooperation.
Absolutely.
But it's not done. People, like you said, these large organizations, I know what to do. I've done my job. He knows what to do. He does his job. We'll just go build a building.
Yes.
Well, if you don't take time to get on the same page and you don't take time to discuss how you're going to deal with issues when they come up, then the probability is people are not going to be on the same page and they're not going to be dealing the same things the same way. So you have trouble.
No, and you have to have the proper approach to rectify a situation when it arises, and that usually becomes some kind of issue too. Speaking of which, go ahead with what you were saying, and then I had an idea I wanted to discuss with you.
All right. Well, we're only part of the way through how the model was developed. Do you want me to finish? Do you want me to go back and finish how the tetrahedron model came to be real quick?
Sure.
Okay. Well, I mentioned the first triangle that I worked with came out of that work, mostly in construction.
Right.
And the question was, you know, what does a dynamic, cooperative, mutually supportive relationship look like?
Right.
All of these answers go on post-it notes, go on chart paper, and then they sort into three categories, which makes the triangle.
Right.
And those three categories are position. And position is who, where, and why. Position is where are you, where am I, who are you, who am I, why are you doing this, why am I doing it, and then who, where, and why are we together. So if we don't take time to listen to each other and agree on where we're going together and why we're doing it together and who we are together, then it's unlikely we're going to be aligned. The second element is skills. And that's the behaviors you mentioned in the introduction. The first one is position. That's the insights. The second is behaviors, which is the skills we develop. And when you look at the skills associated with cooperation, there are things like listening, honesty, understanding other people, empathy, compassion, the willingness to reveal who you really are. So all of these skills to be cooperative, when you really look at them, virtually none of them are covered in our formal education system.
Absolutely not.
So we learn these behavioral relationship skills unconsciously as we grow up. Nobody ever has a formal training program that says, this is how a cooperative person behaves. You just watch your parents, you watch your friends, you go to school, and you see that worked and this didn't work, so you develop some kind of behavior pattern, and it's unconscious. Okay? So if
and yet, look at the divorce rate.
Exactly. So if we don't take time to agree, well, what does cooperative behavior look like, and how are we going to hold each other accountable for behaving in a skilled, cooperative way? If we don't take time to agree on that, then it's inevitable there will be misunderstanding and disagreement.
And total breakdown of the relationship, which is everything we're talking about. These are the components of a healthy, harmonious relationship.
Exactly. And the skills element, so we talked about the position, is the who, where, and why. Skills is what. That's what we do. Anything you can practice and get better at is a skill.
Okay.
So listening to other people is a skill. Self-awareness is a skill.
Gotcha.
What's called personal disclosure, the willingness to say, this is who I am, this is what I think, this is how I see things, that's personal disclosure. That's
gotcha.
A skill. We can get better. Right. So that's the what we do.
Okay.
And just agreeing on what we're going to do together is important. And then the third element is process, and that's the third thing you mentioned in the introduction, insights, behaviors, and processes. And the processes are the how and when we do things together. Okay.
Okay.
You just gave a perfect example of process. How do we deal with conflict when it comes up? I don't mind saying that, you know, in my 25 years of consulting, I have yet to see a construction project that did not include conflict. I have yet to see a human relationship that did not include conflict of some kind.
Certainly.
So if we don't take time on the front end to discuss how we're going to deal with conflicts when they come up, then you can pretty much bet on there being difficulties, because the probability of two people working in the same process to resolve the conflict is virtually zero if they never talk about the process.
Right. And what you'll end up with, instead of construction, will be destruction.
Or at least construction with a lot of conflict. And that triangle is really what inspired the whole be here for each other philosophy.
Got
is
it.
The realization that we can actually model the process of cooperating. Can you imagine taking that model into Congress in the United States?
I would love to.
Well, part of the problem with Congress, part of the challenge with this gridlock, is a significant percentage in the neighborhood, not quite, but in the neighborhood of 50% of elected senators and representatives are attorneys.
Really?
Well, what are attorneys trained to do?
Argue.
They're trained to take a position and argue it.
Yes. Oh, I just thought it was a simple matter of maturity, and it's this. Okay. I really thought it's just a complete lack of maturity, a bunch of people who want to be in control, and their egos are out of, you know, they're in the stratosphere. Okay, so they're going on their trained instinct to hold a position.
Well, but remember the model. You mentioned the immaturity. That's the position element. The power struggles, you know, that's the position element. I want to be in control.
Got you.
The skills element is how they talk with each other, how they get to know each other, how they build relationships, you know.
And how to build oneself up by tearing another person down.
Well, and then the process is they never take time to discuss how they're going to work together. They just argue.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And how they're going to resolve conflict. You know, when we reach an impasse, how are we going to deal with it?
That impasse. Is a process. Absolutely.
That's the process. Okay, so that's where this whole idea of we can find ways to cooperate and be better together came from. That's be here for each other. Now,
okay.
The next step in the evolution and development of the model, one day I had an opportunity in my church community to lead a workshop, and the topic was, what does love teach us? What it was we had a worship service at the beginning of the month, and that was the theme of the worship service. And then 2 weeks later, I led a workshop just to have a different way of looking at it and discussing and experiencing it. And that workshop was, what does love teach us? And so I asked that question, what does love teach us? And I let the participants tell me, the same way we developed the position skills process model, they told me, and I wrote it on Post-it notes, and we put it up on the board. And then I asked them to sort those Post-it notes. They sorted them. I didn't. This is the way it emerged originally. I asked them to sort those Post-it notes into three categories. I said, I can't remember, you know, 35 things, so let's try to find three groups. And when we really got to looking at it, the first category was personal growth. What does love teach us? Love teaches us lessons about loving ourselves, about learning to let go of pain and fear and hurt and grow and see things from a spiritual perspective. And
forgiveness.
It teaches forgiveness, exactly, and compassion. But it teaches us to see ourselves, if we pay attention, it teaches us to see ourselves as spiritual beings having a human experience.
Okay.
That's the whole nature of love. The second category we found was community development, and that's how we build relationships with other people, whether it's in a family, whether it's a romantic relationship, relationship at work, relationship at church, in a club, in a neighborhood, doesn't matter. Community development means a group of people comes together and builds a community.
Okay.
The third category we found was it had to do with our relationship with consciousness.
Mm.
So it what we found from all that, and that has to do with how we relate, if you want to think of it as God or your higher power or Allah, you know, whoever you are, wherever you are, each of us has a relationship with the universe and that natural order that I mentioned earlier in the conversation that I had noticed as a child. You know,
yes.
There's a system out there. There's an intelligent system that governs how things interact and work. And how we relate to that is what this third element is about, our relationship with consciousness.
Gotcha. Okay.
So what I recognized from that exercise and that group was the three elements were the I, the we, and the it.
Okay.
All right. And then
gotcha.
I realized at that point I had actually already heard of the tetrahedron. I didn't know what I was going to do with it yet.
Right.
But after I had the first triangle, which was the we side, cooperation is the we side.
Gotcha.
And then in this particular experience, I recognized the base of the triangle, which is the I, the we, and the it. So each, the I, the we, and the it, each side of the triangle is either an I, the we, or the, I mean each side of the tetrahedron, excuse me.
Yes.
The I, the we, or the it. We've already talked about the we side. So then I saw the structure, and I began to get a glimpse of the truth that was emerging through these exercises that I was being privileged and blessed to have the opportunity to experience. So then I decided to get a group together and ask them. I looked at the I side. And the question I asked for I was, what is it that brings meaning, satisfaction, and fulfillment into your life?
Okay.
Meaning, satisfaction, and fulfillment. And they started brainstorming again, post-it notes, blah, 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 stick them on the chart paper. And as we played with it and sorted it out into three categories, here are the three categories. Remember, these are categories of experiences that bring meaning, satisfaction, and fulfillment into our lives. The first one is love.
Okay.
The second one is service.
Hmm.
And the third one, and this is very significant to me, is purposeful action.
Absolutely.
Love, service, and purposeful action. Now keep in mind, I've done this exercise with many groups, with hundreds and hundreds of people, and those same three elements emerge in the structure of the model every time.
Wow.
They're
and it resonates.
Different ways.
Yes, but it's still, that's your basic structure.
Doesn't it feel right?
It absolutely feels right, absolutely.
And let me share with you, there's a wonderful, wonderful book that emphasizes the significance of that purposeful action. And this really resonated with me because nobody ever sat down with me when I was in my teens and said, let's talk about the purpose of your life, Carl.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was figuring this out in my 40s and 50s.
Mm-hmm.
So purposeful action is a big deal, right? And let me share with you one more reason it's a big deal. I need to make this quick. But there's a fascinating book. You can find it on Amazon. It's called Happier, H-A-P-P-I-E-R, Happier.
Okay.
It's not happiness. It's not happy. It's happier.
Happier. Okay.
And the title, I mean, the author of the book is a gentleman named Tal, T-A-L, Tal Ben-Shahar.
Okay.
He was B-E-N-S-H-A-H-A-R. He immigrated from Israel. He teaches psychology at Harvard. And he became fascinated in happiness when he was a teenager. He had a goal when he was a teenager. He had a goal to win the squash rackets championship of Israel.
Okay.
He competed and he became the national champion in squash rackets of Israel. I think he was 18 years old. And he realized that it didn't make him happy. Even though this was a goal and he was worked so hard for so long, so many hours of practice, hours and hours and hours, worked so hard. And so he became fascinated with this concept of happiness. He studied psychology, got his PhD, and he extensively researched happiness. And what his research concludes, it's all explained in the book,
mm-hmm.
that there are two things that we have to have in our lives to truly be happy in the long term. The first one is we need to schedule, consciously choose to schedule and enjoy short-term pleasurable activities.
Okay.
It could be hobbies, you know, whatever it is that we enjoy and derive pleasure from doing.
Okay.
And then the second thing that creates happiness in our lives is having meaningful goals and knowing you're making progress toward them.
Okay. Yes, absolutely.
It's not achieving the goal that gives you the happiness.
No, it is the ever-increasing evidence that you're getting somewhere with it.
And that you have a purpose. See, it's having the goal out there and making progress toward it. That is the definition of purpose.
Absolutely.
See, so purposeful action is so significant in what brings us meaning, satisfaction, and fulfillment, because that's where our happiness, a big part of where our happiness comes from.
Absolutely.
So love, either giving or receiving love, practicing love, serving others,
mm-hmm.
and then having purposeful action in your life. Those three elements is what gives us a fulfilling life.
Hmm.
All right, so we've got three of the triangles covered. We've got the base, we've got the I side, and we've got the we side. And by the way, in the slideshow that you put together on your website,
mm-hmm.
there's an exploded view of that tetrahedron with these four triangles. And all of these elements are in those four triangles as well as the questions.
Yes, okay.
So the fourth triangle is the it side. And the
right.
question I asked for it, I vary the question sometimes, but in essence, you know, the question is, what does it take for us to have a productive relationship with consciousness?
Uh-huh.
I can ask it different ways. It's actually slightly different in the triangle, in the model that you've got. But the point is, how I ask the question is not as important as what we're trying to define. And it can be defined many different ways by many different people. But the question is, how do we relate to consciousness?
Right.
It's out there. It's the intelligence of the universe. How do we relate to it? How do we connect? How do we get something from it? How do we contribute to it? And then we start brainstorming. We get all these post-it notes sorted into three categories. And the three categories, and remember, this doesn't matter who makes up the group. The first category, first of the three elements, is self-realization. And what I see that to mean in the group truth that's spoken, you know, in these exercises,
mm-hmm.
is recognizing, it's what I mentioned earlier, it's recognizing that we're spiritual beings. It's recognizing
mm-hmm.
that we are soul living in a human body.
Gotcha.
And until we get to that point, you know, soul is the conscious part of us. The human body, the biology, has the brain, the heart, the muscles, the nervous system, but soul is the consciousness, and it's what brings the life force energy into the organism and allows it to function as a human being.
Absolutely.
So until we recognize and embrace our identity as soul, we're not really understanding our relationship with consciousness.
Mm. Absolutely.
The second element is principles. And what I mean by that is a principle is basically a law. Gravity, the law of gravity,
mm-hmm.
is a fundamental principle of the science of physics. Okay? And
right.
and there's a very simple exercise I use. If I take an object of any kind, I use a pen typically when I do it, but if I take a pen and I hold it out in front of me and I let go of it, what do we expect to happen?
We expect it to fall.
All right. There's a whole science around how we know things called epistemology.
Okay.
You can know something by understanding the operating principle. You can know something by having the experience yourself, like touching a hot stove.
Mm-hmm.
You can know something by trusting somebody like your mother, and she tells you it's true, so gosh, it must be true.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the science, epistemology. Well, in the example of the principle of gravity, we know the pen's going to fall, first of all, because we've seen it happen a lot, but second, because we went to school and we learned the underlying governing principle of gravity.
Right.
And in that example, the law it, or the principle is aligned with our experience.
Right.
Okay. The question is, what are the principles that govern the spiritual function of the universe?
Wow. Okay.
I never studied those in school. Did you?
No. If
so
I had
how
asked
do
that
we
question,
align? Pardon me?
If I had asked that question, it would have been a lot worse. So let's repeat the question. What are the principles that,
that
govern?
Govern the spiritual function of the universe?
Okay.
And
what are they, Carl?
Part,
I don't want
to. We're all part of it. Now, well, it's a little bit beyond the scope of this discussion. To try
okay.
to get into that, but there are books out there. I mean, you can go on Amazon and type in spiritual principles, and there are
sure.
books.
Mm-hmm.
There are laws of leadership and things like that. What they're doing is they're trying to capture spiritual principles. I have my resource, but the point is, you know, the point is not so much specifically what are the principles that I know or you know, as there are principles that govern the function of the universe as a spiritual system, and until we learn them and align our behaviors with them, the probability is we're dropping our pen a lot.
Got you.
I have violated many spiritual principles many times, and they came back and bit me over and over and over again. And finally, I woke up and said, well, wait a minute, you know, if I'm behaving in a manipulative way to get my way, and that's coming back to hurt me, then I must be violating a spiritual principle.
Absolutely.
And being ingratiating, giving myself away to accommodate somebody else, is a manipulative behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that may get me what I want in the short term.
But
spiritually. It's not honoring. Spiritually, it's not honoring who I am. It's not living in integrity. It's not practicing the law of cause and effect.
Mm-hmm.
That's another good one. Law of karma
yes.
is the law of cause and effect.
Absolutely.
Okay. So the point is that these spiritual principles are out there, and if we don't take time to study and identify them and start aligning our the way we live our lives with those principles, then
right.
the probability is we are not aligned with how it works, it being the third leg of the triangle, you know.
Absolutely.
Right, and then the last element, what I hear in the structure of the groups that speak to me is surrender.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is not so much giving up or not so much lack of control or
submitting. I like the word. When we talk about surrender, I like to compare it to the word submit, because a lot of us, when we hear the word surrender, we react to the word submit when it's not what's being said. Surrender basically being go with the flow. Does that resonate with what you believe? Okay.
Absolutely. You said it beautifully. And so what that means in my, the way I experience it and the way I hear it coming from the group is the realization that there is this conscious part of us that we talked about in self-realization. And that conscious part of us, soul, is our connection to the it.
Right.
It's the part of us that is part of the it. It's actually consciousness. It's a spark of consciousness that imbues our being with life force energy. And it's our connection to the collective consciousness that is the spirituality in the universe.
Mm-hmm. And they're inseparable. The creation cannot be apart from its source. Mm-hmm.
Okay, but what surrender means is recognizing that we have to subordinate the lower, less conscious distractions that we deal with. We have to subordinate those in order to allow that conscious part of us to connect with the collective consciousness and guide us in a way that's better for us than we can ever figure out in our mind or feel in our body.
Can I ask you, are you basically saying to be in the world but not of it?
That sounds like surrender to me.
Okay. Because a lot of us want, you know, a lot of people do ask what that truly means, and it's a beautiful topic. But to be in the world but not so reactive to the lower distractions, that you, in your mind, are always connected to the higher self and therefore the will of the creator, source, God, whatever you want to say.
Well, the only distinction
And that's the way
I would
to live.
Make, the only distinction I would make in what you just said is that I see soul as separate from mind. And soul is the conscious part of us.
Right.
Mind is a wonderful servant as long as it's guided by soul.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a terrible master. If we allow the mind to overrule soul,
absolutely,
then we got a problem.
I can make a clear distinction. Mind with a capital M being the higher consciousness, mind with a lowercase M meaning gray matter that we use to make important decisions in our lives when we don't have the big picture. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. That's certainly a way to represent.
The higher mind and the crazy lower mind is what I was alluding to. Okay.
But anyway, so that's the essence of the tetrahedron is those four triangles. We develop it by asking four questions. And what I find is regardless of the demographics of the group I'm working with, that same structure, that same tetrahedron, and those same 12 elements come out of the process, and everybody relates to them.
Absolutely.
I have yet to have anybody who said, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Right.
They participate in developing the model, and then when they see it and they look at it, they go, oh, yeah.
They get
that's
it.
That's how it is. And then typically what I would do is if I'm working with a group, I would just ask them, okay, how can we take this model and choose an action or two to change your life in a way that implements or utilizes that model to make it better?
Okay. And does everybody get a copy of the model for their personal use?
Absolutely. Whenever I work with a group, I transcribe the proceedings. And in fact, there's some additional material that I sent to you, Charlotte, that had bullets associated with each of the elements, each of the three elements of each triangle. Those bullets were actual responses that were written on post-it notes that came from a group. Mm-hmm. So what I did was I transcribed all of that, made up a set of proceedings, and then I sent that to the group by email afterwards so they had a record of our collective experience together.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
And I find that I find that to be very important, because it's amazing, you know, even in the flow, when you're in the experience and having the direct personal experience, it's very easy to forget because there's a lot of stuff that's going on. And if you can go back and look at the capture later, it's very powerful.
Very impactful, and yes, getting to revisit that, even as time goes by, from a new perspective, a fresh perspective, from the vantage point of a new conflict in your life?
Yes.
That, this sounds incredibly profound for, especially in a business arena where you don't want to, you know, touch on any one religion. This is a universal philosophy that Carl is describing to all of us without regard to which religion we associate ourselves with or what set of beliefs. This is just cut and dried universal principle. It's fabulous. Speaking of the groups that you have done these for, I love success stories. Do you have a couple really inspiring success stories that came out of your time with groups?
Well, yes. there's a construction client I've worked with for over 20 years. The type of contract they specialize in is it's called a job order contract. And what a job order contract means is typically a campus like a military base or a university will have a lot of what's called churn construction. They're always remodeling a room or needing to add a room onto a building or redo the mechanical system in a building or, you know, change out the floor coverings and the paint and the window coverings. They're always doing something called churn construction. And if they have to put each little project together as an independent package and design it and put a set of contract documents together and put them on the street and bid it, that's very labor-intensive. It's very expensive to administer all that.
Mm-hmm.
So what a job order contract is you have a unit price book as a pricing mechanism, and the contractor proposes to do work for the campus and use that unit price book and then multiply every line item in the book by a coefficient. Now, let's not get into the details of it, but the point is it gives the owner of the campus, the organization that owns the campus, gives them the opportunity to have a competitive price on a unit price book that allows them to go do work without having to put a design package together because they have unit prices on all the elements of the work.
Okay?
That type of work requires a close relationship. It requires people to trust each other and work together.
Right.
And typically, the contract is awarded for 1 year, and they'll have either four or nine years of renewal clauses in it. So you work together for a year, and then the owner says, well, this went well, we'll do it for another year. So there's an incentive for the contractor to build a trusting relationship with the owner so they can work together for 4 or 5 or 9 years.
Huh.
All right, so it's a relationship-based business. And this particular contractor, we connected in the early 90s at a Navy base. They liked what I did. They realized that it significantly improved their effectiveness. And over a period of 20 years, the president of the company said, two things to me that really impressed me. One, he basically said, Carl, what you do is magic. And all he was referring to there is he was used to the competitive, risky, uncooperative approach to construction that you and I discussed earlier.
Right.
And he saw that when everybody got together and applied these principles, it worked better. It just magically transformed the way the project culture worked. That's what he was referring to. And then the second thing is they documented over time that every time they brought me into a contract, every single time they brought me into a contract, both their revenue and their profit margin went up. They got more work, and the work they got was more profitable.
That's how cooperation works. Any business is about relationships. That's how I've built businesses, and very successful at getting a startup off the ground, and it's because of the relationship that I build with people. Everybody, I consider everybody I interact with a customer, so there's always that level of customer service, and I've seen beautiful results from just that standpoint. But Carl, we actually have someone on the line. Would you like to take a call, see if you have a question? Okay, it's area code 408. I'm going to bring you on the air. Hi, this is Charlotte. You're live with Carl DeVilbiss. Did you have a question?
Yes. Am I on the air?
Yes, you are. What's your name?
Good. My name's Donna.
Hi, Donna.
I'd like to invite Carl back to your show for a second run to talk about each of the elements in those triangles themselves and take us deeper into the Be Here for Each Other process with each of the, the parts that he described, so that we can really learn how to apply those parts in our own lives. I wonder if that's possible.
Carl? That's a beautiful invitation. Thank you, Donna.
it is beautiful, and I'm just flabbergasted. I would love to do that.
I'm flabbergasted myself.
Well, I'm not the host of this program, so I'll have to be invited by the host.
What fascinates to me is that because the two of you dialogue so beautifully, that if you had your listener, I would certainly be able to come take you share in a deep way and apply it the next week and go into the next part, and oh my gosh, it could be transformative in my life.
I'd be happy to do that, Carl. If you're open to it, we can select in the new year a group of Saturdays. If you'd like to make a series, we can talk about this. I myself, about eight to nine pages of notes on everything Carl was just saying, and I agree with you. It is fascinating. Thank you for the compliment on how we dialogue. I really thought the listeners would enjoy this, and thank you so much for all of your kind words. I think Carl and I both feel humbled and honored by that, and I think your idea is fantastic.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Carl, how do you feel? Would you like to do that?
I would be thrilled. I hope it's been obvious that I love sharing what I can in this format. And that is a perfect segue to one thing I wanted to add briefly, which is a personal story.
Okay.
I talked about the organizational impact of it coming, of applying these principles of Be Here for Each Other and cooperating. But going back to Donna's suggestion, I was doing a project in Houston, Texas, and we went through the process. Remember the position skills process in the WE model. And we had gone through in the workshop a process of discussing conflict and developing a conflict resolution model. We actually had a step-by-step written process. When a conflict occurs, step number one, we agree we have a problem. Step number two, we discuss it, define it clearly, make sure we agree on what the issue is and write it down. Step number three, who all needs to be involved. Step number four, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So we had talked about conflict, what it is, and then we developed a process. And we took a break after this. And I walked out in the hall to go down the hall to use the facilities. And mm-hmm. a lady came up to me and stopped me. And she says, Carl, I came to this workshop expecting to learn how to cooperate at work. What I didn't expect was to learn how to deal with issues with my husband at home.
Oh.
And I just was flabbergasted. You know, it's so beautifully and eloquently, you know, pointed out to me the universal nature of this
Absolutely.
Model and the structure and the principles and the understanding that be here for each other. We are never taught how to be here for each other.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we get it? We can't get it unless we come together and we talk about it. We have an open conversation, an authentic conversation. And I take time to listen to you, and you take time to listen to me, and then we try to identify the truth that comes out of the conversation
yeah.
and move forward based on that common truth. And that's one thing I want to mention about this model. I don't see the model as so much science or philosophy as I see it as truth. And what I mean by that, I go back to it doesn't matter the demographics of the group, that this structure, this model, and those 12 elements emerge from the group consciousness, from the collective consciousness of the people in the room. And the way I interpret that is they're getting parts and pieces coming out of this collective consciousness in the universe. And each of us has access to it through soul.
Huh.
So we're getting parts and pieces, and when we put it all together on a piece of chart paper and then sort it into the structure that comes off that paper is the truth that we have collectively captured from the universe.
That's beautiful. I have an idea, if I may. Donna.
Sure.
I'm gonna run this by you too, Donna, okay?
Okay.
Carl, how do you feel about doing like a virtual workshop over the course of several weekends, and I can together we can create handouts and get the models. I can have them downloaded from the website. People can have paper in their hands and follow along classroom style. Are you open to that?
I think that's very valuable.
Okay.
I think that's valuable. From Donna's standpoint, the value in that is that we can experience in small chunks that, you know, like the foundation element, when he goes through and asks us our questions, and then we can write it down, and you may have
right.
the line open, you know, so people can pop it in, and they can bring a particular interest in their own lives to their intention, and then the intent of sharing, and I know sometimes they have those little things where you type in your response and it comes up on the screen of the virtual workshops, so you can see what people are, you know, contributing, and that way you don't have 16 people talking over each other.
Right. I would have to look into that, honestly, and I certainly don't wish to monopolize Carl's time. I know he does have a busy schedule. But I'll come up with something and something interactive, Donna. And my question to you, Donna, would you be able to get a group of people together to share in the experience with you?
I can certainly do that. I can certainly do that. Now, what I'd like is to have the less technical on the tetrahedron mechanics and really go deep into each of the principles, so when I walk away I have my three pieces on that one triangle that I can put into practice and then come back the next with some, you know, results.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that
thank
sounds
you so much for asking.
So, Donna, I am thrilled that you called. I thank you for tuning in and for offering that wonderful suggestion. I will work something out with Carl, and we'll see what's doable for both of us time-wise and that type of thing. But, Carl, what can the rest of us do to help promote Be Here for Each Other?
Well,
Donna, I'm going to put you on hold. Thanks a lot, okay? Hang on. You can still listen. I'm just going to mute your phone.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Carl. What can we do to help spread this message for you?
Well, you have the blog website on on the program page, behereforeachother.com, all one word. And on that website, there's a promotion of the three books we've produced so far. They're available on Kindle in ebook format. They're, I think, very reasonably priced at $2.99. And these are early versions of the books. I'm in the process of updating and structuring a series of books. It's expanded to six editions. The three that are on the website now and on Amazon Kindle, and then we've added three: Be Here for Each Other in the Family, Be Here for Each Other with God, and Be Here for Each Other Health.
Okay.
So those six books, we're in the process of linking them together more effectively, making them more consistent in their format and their structure and their presentation style and all that. The three books that are available, there's tremendous value. I'm very comfortable saying that anybody who picks up one of those books for $2.99 is going to get far more than $3 worth of value out of it many times over.
Absolutely.
just from the experience of reading and thinking about it. And then we have a Be Here for Each Other group page on Facebook. You can go to that page and like it. We post on that almost every day. Blog posts are not quite as frequent, but anything you can do to engage and then embrace the concept of Be Here for Each Other, start to learn how to practice it in your life, and then just share it. That's part of what we're after, is to just help people. I've never had anybody react in a negative way to the Be Here for Each Other theme. Everybody resonates with it. It makes sense to us as human beings. It makes sense to us as conscious spiritual beings that we're supposed to be here for each other.
Absolutely.
So the more we can do to just help people wake up to that, to help them awaken to the realization that we're far more alike than we are different. Everybody fits this model. Everybody. So if we can just help people wake up and realize we're much more alike as spiritual beings than we are different as human beings, that is the foundation of we are all one. It's
mm-hmm.
the foundation of the new movement of coming together to create a whole new way of being together. And that's what Be Here for Each Other is all about.
And you just provided everybody with the definition of what our function is on this planet. We are all one. We all have one function. It is not, our function is not individualized as we are with our differences that we should be celebrating, but it is collective. Our collective function is to help each other. And
yes.
I think that's a beautiful note to end the segment on.
Thank you.
I just want to give your contact information one more time. It's behereforeachother.com. If you would like to offer feedback, comments, suggestions, like Donna's beautiful suggestion, you can reach Carla at behereforeachother@gmail.com. I always welcome your feedback and comments. My email address is spiritualinsightsradio@gmail.com. And Carl, did you want me to give your phone number as you indicated in the contact information?
Please do, and I
okay.
use that. I also have a consulting business in addition to the Be Here for Each Other movement, and it focuses on cooperation, and I can be reached with the phone number for it.
Okay, and that phone number is area code 615-339-4677, and you're in Tennessee, right? Beautiful Tennessee.
Yeah. Nashville, Tennessee.
I love Tennessee. Wow, Carl. I told you this was going to be a great segment. I'm going to pull the I told you so card. This is wonderful. I had such a great time. I've learned so much, and I've realized a lot in myself in the process, and I thank you for a beautiful, beautiful segment of self-awareness and kind of realignment with true purpose. I really appreciate your time, your knowledge, and you have a heart of gold. You really do.
Well, I feel humbled and very appreciative. I'm thrilled that we connected, and it's been truly a joy and a pleasure and an opportunity to serve, and that's one of the things that I find great satisfaction in, is serving any way I can.
I do as well. It's my greatest joy in life is to help others. Wow. Well, everybody, again, thank you to Donna, and thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And I will, I guess, after the holidays, I will get together with Carl, come up with some kind of game plan, and make an announcement as to how we'll proceed with sharing some deeper information as requested. Okay? So I'll get together with you, Carl.
I'm ready right now.
Okay, good. I mean, I just had this big vision of handouts, marketing. You know, I'm crazy that way.
No,
I didn't
understand.
Know. But, I mean, the original intention for the show, and I want to point out to the listeners, I am a diehard student teacher of A Course in Miracles. Please notice that not once in all of that dialogue did Carl mention the word ego or, you know, all those concepts that you normally hear come out of my mouth. I intentionally refrained from mentioning any of them, because the first time I ever talked to Carl, this is how he spoke, and I understood every word he was saying, and not once did he mention a religious structure. He just gets it, and I thought it was beautiful, so I immediately scheduled. That's why we're on today. I needed him on the air immediately, basically. So, Carl, I will talk to you very soon. And I look forward to whatever we put together with this, okay?
Thank you. It's been a delight, a pleasure, and I look forward to it.
Me too. All right, everybody, that's our show for today. As always, God bless and be at peace. So long for now.